Right. Oh, good. I was like, I'm going to trust that the mic is going to come on, and it has indeed. Excellent AV team. Thank you so much for choosing to come to my talk. I came to EMF for the first time at the last EMF, and there were enough train talks that I thought, yeah, there's an audience for this. Let's give it a go. My name is Emma Charleston. Who am I? What do I do? My bread and butter is that I'm a graphic designer and illustrator day to day. I'm also a university lecturer in graphic design and UX. I do not code, so don't talk to me about that. I also consider myself to be a train fan, a fan of trains. Here's some pictures of me on an Amtrak train from Los Angeles to San Diego. Lovely journey if any of you have done it. There's a picture of me on the right. You can't really tell, but I'm on a double-decker train for the first time ever in Europe, and I'm very excited about it. And in the middle, one of my life highlights, which was getting to ride in a tube driver's cab last year up and down the Metropolitan line for a few hours, which was just an incredible experience. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about the kind of train fan I am to kick this talk off, because I'm not an engineering fan, I'm not an engineer, I'm not really super interested in how the trains work, although sometimes people do get me with that knowledge. I'm also not necessarily super into collecting, you know, in the train spotting type of way, although I do get very excited when that mysterious yellow train goes past, or the leaf blower train. So I am a little bit, but I'm not writing the numbers down at the end of the station. Basically, I am a train fan because of why they exist and what they stand for, and what they enable, particularly for people like me who either cannot or who have chosen not to drive. So this is where I grew up. This is North Wales. I grew up on the Isle of Anglesey, and this is the bus stop which was closest to my house, about a 20-minute walk from my house. Maybe three buses a day that may or may not show up. I've spent many depressing hours stood in this bus stop waiting for a bus that might not come. When I turned 19, I moved to Brighton to go to university. I don't know if any of you here have been to Brighton or know Brighton at all. So those of you will recognize these pictures. They're not behind me. This is Brighton. I should be totally clear and say that I actually am very anti-AI generated art, but I thought it would be funny to generate these visions of what Brighton looked like to me as a 19-year-old from the countryside. So many trains going so many directions so frequently, and also buses. I like buses too, don't get me wrong, but we're here for the trains today. this was what life in Brighton was like for me. Suddenly, I'd gone from being someone who kind of had to rely on my friends who had learned to drive or my parents to get anywhere, or a very unreliable public transport system, to having the kind of independence that I'd never really imagined was for me before. So it was a very exciting time, and I loved trains as a kid, and my love of them has only grown as an adult because of why they exist. So the fact that I keep expecting the slides to be behind me and they're not, sorry, I keep gesturing here. At a certain point in our history, we decided that this was something that we as a society wanted to invest in, and I'm really glad that we did. And obviously all of, or many of you who are here will know how that has gone since, many different things, beaching, privatization, and so on and so forth. But there was a golden era where it was decided, admittedly for quite capitalist reasons, that we were going to build an absolute load of trains, or train lines, to be clear. And I'm really glad that we did that, because I think it has given us as people opportunities within this country that are really, really important. So a little bit of a tone switch here. This is a few images from during the pandemic, which I'm sure will be very familiar to many of you. The pandemic was a very uncertain time for many, many different areas, not least trains. As I'm sure you all remember, we went from being able to go wherever we wanted, whenever we wanted, to actually kind of not being able to travel at all, really. I, like I'm sure many of you did, you can probably see, I hope, these pictures here. This is a London A to Z in which I highlighted all of the streets which I had walked down from my where I lived in the centre in Battersea, because I had nothing else to do. I couldn't rely on my usual ability to travel and explore by public transport, so instead I walked very, very extensively on foot with my border collie who I had at the time. And I'm sure that many of you will be familiar with this experience. I got to know my local area of Battersea so much better than I would otherwise have done if I'd just been living there and, you know, going to where my friends were in East London and North London and not really getting to know my own neighbourhood. These are a few images in relation to trains during the pandemic. So on the left, a really interesting side effect of the diminished usage and staffing of trains. This was around, I think it was Christmas 2020 or possibly even Christmas 21, I don't remember, but there was another ongoing lockdown and I was still travelling because I volunteer with Samaritans and we were considered essential workers, which was very flattering, so I got a special little pass that let me keep travelling. And I think it was Christmas Eve or Boxing Day. Some people had graffitied the entirety of Oxford Circus Station. It was quite astonishing. And there was also a big uptick in graffiti on trains as well, because there just wasn't as much, there weren't as many eyes on the network, basically, which was a really interesting, unexpected side effect of the pandemic. And then on the right, you've got a deserted tube train. And in the middle, you've got a painting that I did in the very early days of the pandemic, which was me and my dog stood in a park in South London watching all these trains go by at night with the bright lights just totally empty, knowing that we couldn't get on them. So it was a very kind of evocative and unusual time for public transport and particularly for trains. So again, hopping on to me and what I do. I'm a graphic designer, and during the pandemic, like many people, I was furloughed and I ultimately was made redundant. I lost my job. I was lucky that I had a little bit in savings, and having sworn when I graduated from my undergraduate degree that I would never return to academia, I was bored and I decided to do an MA. And the only thing that I felt able to do an MA in was graphic design, because it's kind of all I know. And part of the thing that I love the most about graphic design as a discipline that I've chosen as my, you know, my life path, my career, is that graphic design is always about something. It's never just a discipline in isolation. You are always doing design about a given subject. And most of the time in a career, that will be, you know, whatever your client wants you to do, whatever your client is. I've done a lot of work with charities and in the education sector. But doing an MA in graphic design and doing the particular MA that I chose to do was a really exciting chance to critically explore a particular subject matter through the lens of graphic design. So essentially, that is what I decided to do. And surprise, surprise, I decided to do it about trains because I'd never had the chance to do design about trains before. TfL is kind of my dream employer, but I haven't got there yet. So I was thinking about trains for my MA. I was also thinking about a particular practice which is known as placemaking. I don't know if this particular term is familiar to many of you here, but it's a particular, I mean, I've put a proper definition of it up on the slide, but it's basically about how we define sense of place, how we feel that we understand a place where we live or where we work or where we move through. And it's actually quite a complicated thing in terms of what makes a place feel like a positive place or a safe space or a happening place. You know, we've turned this field into a place just by bringing all this stuff here. And, you know, sometimes you'll walk along a street and it has shops on it and it's a bit of a place, and then there's a pop-up market and suddenly it becomes somehow more of a place. I mean, I'm not a placemaking professional, so I'm not the best at explaining this, but so I wanted to think about placemaking specifically in relation to our railway network and our railway infrastructure and kind of the impacts of how that shifted and changed during the pandemic. And obviously, thinking about the whole of the UK and all of placemaking and all of the railway network would have been far too big and complex a subject to take on. So I decided to focus specifically on the London to Brighton railway line, because I lived in Brighton for over a decade when I graduated from university, and I have lived in London since 2019. and so I feel like I've travelled this railway line a lot, and I'm assuming that many of you who have chosen to come to this talk are also very familiar with this particular stretch of railway. And so I decided to frame my study in those terms. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of us got much more into walking during the pandemic, and I felt like I knew that railway line like the back of my hand. But I'd never walked along it. I'd only ever journeyed, you know, flown past at sort of 70 to 100 miles an hour on the train. I'd never actually got to know what the areas around the railway line were like on foot. So my sort of premise for my MA project and what I'm here to talk to you about today was this body of research which I did, which involved walking the entire length of the London to Brighton line in 12 individual sections, because I'm not incredibly fit and could not have done it in one go. And walking it in 12 sections also gave me a really great chance to bring a guest with me along on each individual section. And I was really lucky that after some thought, I had 12 friends and acquaintances who could offer really interesting perspectives on each individual section of the railway line. And I was thinking a little bit, like, what am I going to do with this project? What am I going to make at the end of it? And I started thinking about the format of the railway ticket as being a really interesting little prompt for making design. I went to a really interesting talk from someone yesterday who was talking about, oh, it was B. Buckingham, actually, if he's here, about how limitations can impose a really interesting sort of adaptation on our design. And by limiting myself to this tiny little format and using it to explore the themes that emerged, what could I achieve? So these were some early sketches, and I started thinking, you know, can I do things that fold out? Can I make little booklets? So this was just kind of where I went with it. So I set off on my walks, and that's kind of what I'm going to talk you through now. So the first walk was from London Victoria to Clapham Junction, a couple of hours, nice easy walk. I did this with my friend Heidi, and what we talked about on this particular section was the experience of entering the city as an outsider, specifically London. And I don't know how many of you share this experience, but for me, growing up in a rural area, London was kind of the pinnacle of achievement. It was where I always hoped I would end up, but there was also a little bit of imposter syndrome, a feeling of, well, I can never make it in London. I can, you know, it will never be for me. It's too expensive. It's too high pressure. And both Heidi and I shared that experience of riding into London on the train and feeling this kind of surge of excitement. And even though I've lived there now since 2019, when I ride over this particular railway bridge and I see there's the bridge that has the lights on at night, I still get this feeling of real, like, excitement and anticipation that I have managed to end up living in this city. But we didn't just think of it from that perspective. We also thought about how hard it can be sometimes to make it in the city. You know, there's all sorts of different experiences. Obviously, me and Heidi, we are still British. We're still coming here with the language and so on. How much harder it is to come into the city as an outsider from other places. So we talked about a lot of different things, and I made a series of individual tickets about it. And then the next walk was from Clapham Junction to Streatham Common. I did this walk with Jay Owens. Jay Owens has written an excellent book called Dust, The Modern World in a Trillion Particles. It's a really fascinating and kind of horrifying book. And the reason I invited Jay to join me was to talk about the theme of leisure. And I feel like Jay is someone who I really admire. I actually don't know if Jay's here today. Hopefully Jay won't mind me saying this. I really admire how Jay has managed to somehow have a very accomplished professional career and yet always seems able to make time for really interesting leisure. And I really respect that about her, and that was why I invited her here. What's so interesting about this section of the route is that a lot of people move here from central London. So if you've ever been wealthy enough to have a home in central London, you decide to settle down and have kids, maybe you move to Streatham, maybe you move to Balham. It's all a very nice area. But what's so interesting is part of what makes it nice is the huge amount of green space in this part of South London. And a lot of that green space only exists because of railway infrastructure, because there's this huge amount of railways crisscrossing in the south of the city that sort of carved out these areas that we have managed to maintain for the purposes of leisure. So it just goes to show how the physical infrastructure of the railways can really shape our societies and our behaviours. And also, quite obviously, the railways contribute to our access to leisure, you know, how we get to see our friends. And as I'm sure many of you experienced during the pandemic, without them, particularly living in a place like London where everyone seems to live at least an hour away, it really affected our ability to socialise. And so I made, again, a series of tickets. The third walk was from Streatham Common to East Croydon. This was with Cara Courage, although actually it was planned to be with Cara Courage, but ironically, Cara was suffering very badly from long COVID. I invited Cara because she's written a couple of really incredible academic books about the practice of placemaking. Trauma-informed placemaking came out really, really recently, and I believe is informed by the experiences of the pandemic. We talked about what it means to have a sense of place. Because for me, perhaps slightly cruelly and naively, this section of the route from Streatham to Croydon, I'd always thought of as being sort of kind of a nothingy section, like it was just street after street after street of houses. And actually, by walking through it, I realised that there was a lot more going on here than I had previously thought, and a lot more individual efforts in each neighbourhood to actually foster that sense of place. I really like that sticker on the bin that says 2020, the year the bin went out more than me. That was in the summer of 2021. I talked with her after, and I thought a lot on the route about how we think about a sense of place. And actually, since I did this project last year, I moved to within 15 minutes walk of this section of the route, and I now have trains running through my back garden from London to Brighton. Not actually my back garden, but I feel really lucky that I have moved to this area because I have come to understand it in a much better way. And I made many more tickets. Then I walked from East Croydon to Purley with Alice Bell. Alice Bell is the author of Our Biggest Experiment, An Epic History of the Climate Crisis. I really recommend this book if you want a primer of the climate crisis. Alice also works as, or used to work, her first job was as an explainer in the Science Museum, which made her absolutely the most charismatic person to do a walk with. I barely got a word in edgeways, but in a really good way, because she told me so much about trains and the environment. And I'm sure you're all very well aware that traveling by train is a much more environmentally friendly way of traveling. I think that's a fairly well-known fact. But what's also so interesting is, as I mentioned in the leisure section, the way that the physical infrastructure of change contributes things like environment, places for animals to live, and leisure spaces for us. You can see in these pictures there's allotments, again, which are kind of wedged in by the railway line. So that was really interesting. And she also told me some fascinating stories about various solar schemes, the idea of being able to potentially solar power this section of the railways, which was currently in research at the time when I did this project. Because what I didn't realise is that sometimes if you travel the London to Brighton railway line, you'll be familiar with the frustration of not enough trains, all the trains are full, we could really do with more trains. Some of the reason that they don't run more is not actually down to the amount of rolling stock they have or the timetabling, it's the fact that there isn't physically enough electricity in the network to do it. So potentially introducing solar as a source of power could at times mitigate this, which I wasn't aware of at all and found really interesting. Again, series of tickets. And then I moved on to walk from Purley to Merstham, and I will admit Merstham is actually a little bit off the route, but I needed somewhere to break the journey up. And I walked this section with Alex Silito, who is an old school friend of mine. So we're both from North Wales, and we've both had that experience of moving down to this part of the country. And I used to live with Alex in Brighton, and he was commuting up to London at the time. And the main reason that he stopped living with me was not because I'm awful, but it was because he couldn't bear the commute. It just drove him mad. The stress, the uncertainty. I think it wasn't even the experience of the commute that was bad, because he was actually very good at carving out his own space and his own time to get things done on the train. It was the lack of certainty around whether the trains would go or not, whether one day it would be absolutely rammed because something had gone wrong earlier. And he ended up moving up to London because he couldn't take it anymore. So we talked a lot about this experience because I think this is a big part of the railway network for many people. It's really easy for me to say that I'm a train fan because I mostly ride trains for leisure and for fun. For people who ride them day in, day out, it can be a really hard, tough, exhausting experience. And Alex particularly found it really interesting, the idea that people... You sometimes spend as much as 3 hours a day with these people, and a lot of people sit in the same place on the train every day. So you see these people day in, day out. You almost get to know them, and yet you never speak. And this is this really interesting modern relationship that we have with people. And then I walked from Merstham to Hawley with my friend Sarah Cole. And the reason I invited Sarah on this section is because she lives in Redhill. And the reason that she's chosen to live in Redhill is because she has a lot of friends in London and a lot of friends in Brighton. And unlike most people I know who choose one or the other, she's chosen to live in this place where actually she doesn't really know anyone, but it gives her the best access to the people she knows. We reflected a lot on how, for many people, Redhill is a commuter town. They live there, but they don't live there. You know, they spend most of their life in other places. And how much Redhill changed during the pandemic, simply by virtue of everyone suddenly being like, oh, I'm stuck in Redhill now. What's it going to be like? So that was a really interesting conversation to have. And then I walked from Hawley to Three Bridges with Georgina Voss. Georgina has very recently put out this book, Systems Ultra, Making Sense of Technology in a Complex World. And her specialism is thinking about big systems. So she seemed like the perfect person to invite along to this section where we thought about how public transport intersects with all the other kinds of public transport and cars as well. And this was a fascinating time to do this walk because that car park that you see there, that is Gatwick Airport's car park when not many planes were going. And again, that deserted terminal. It was a really strange time to do this walk. And we talked a lot together about how even though an airport is something that has been built by people for people, it's ultimately a machine. It's a machine for ferrying cargo in and out. And sometimes it can be quite a brutal system in terms of how it has to manage that flow of people, planes, and other modes of transport. It was a particularly beautiful section as well, which I wasn't really expecting. And then I walked from Three Bridges to Bulcombe with my friend Jade Mars, who, like me, is a queer zine maker. And we talked about what it means to queer things. And I'm aware that for some people this might seem like a strange thing to say, queering the railways, but actually many of you are probably aware that both London and Brighton host some of the biggest pride events in the country. The railway line is a vital connection between these. For people like me and Jade, who grew up in parts of the country outside of London, it took us quite a long time to find our people, shall we say. And the railways facilitate that because they enabled us to travel from our smaller, more insular parts of the country into cities and places where we would find our people. But it's also really interesting to note that even though I'm framing this in a very positive way, trains aren't always a safe place for people with alternative identities. My ex-partner, who I lived in Brighton with, always used to say that Pride was actually the time when she felt most unsafe and got the most abuse for being a trans woman because of the influx of people. So I think there's a broadcaster, Tim Dunn, who's made some documentaries about the railways, and he's talked about how, you know, the liveries that you get on the trains where they put the rainbow on the front of the trains, some people think that's just tokenism, but for him and for me as well, I think it does mean something. It is a gesture on the part of the railway networks to say, like, these trains are for you and about you and are a safe space for you. Hopefully that's at least the message that's being conveyed. So then I walked from Bulcombe to Haywards Heath. I'll skip over this one relatively fast because it's a little bit niche, but I walked it with three friends from university, and we reflected on specifically on creative careers, because London and Brighton are both real hubs for creativity, and how the trains have facilitated our ability to have careers, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, creative or not. And also this section is home to one of the most beautiful and striking features of the whole route, which is the Bulcombe Viaduct, which I would really encourage you, if you've never actually gone and walked near, it's a stunning piece of architecture. It's really fun to explore and you can just go right up to it. And then I walked from Haywards Heath down to Burgess Hill with Jonathan Williams. Jonathan Williams is the editor of a podcast called Queer Out Here, which I really recommend you check out. It's basically all kinds of different queer people making a kind of magazine-style podcast of their experiences of the outdoors. And I brought Jonathan along because I wanted to talk about the sound of the railways, and not just the sound of the railways, but also, as mentioned, the natural spaces around the railways. So we took a lot of field recordings. You can see there's like a freight train in Haywards Heath there that we recorded, the very different sound aesthetic of that type of transport. There's also a place called World's End near Burgess Hill, which I didn't know about until I did this walk. Second to last section, I walked from Burgess Hill to Hassocks with my friend Zoe Austin, who is another graphic designer, and we talked about design on the railways and also all the other examples of design that we saw as we travelled. As I'm sure many of you are aware, that typeface on that public signage there is a typeface called Transport, which was created to give absolute clarity to these communications. And there's lots of other examples of this within the railway network. I actually wrote my undergraduate dissertation all about Metroland and how good design persuaded lots of Londoners to uproot their lives and move to the suburbs simply through beautiful posters telling them how nice their lives would be. So design plays a really important role in the railway networks, both for evocative reasons and also simply because you need to get people to do what they're told, and design plays a big part in that. And then the final walk I did with my friend James Burt, and we talked about how the railways support many of our personal journeys through life, and there's lots of different threads coming into this, you know, queerness and finding our people and so on. And for both me and James, James has spent much of his life in Brighton. I came to Brighton a bit later on. And coming to Brighton, even though I don't live there anymore, it still always feels like a homecoming for me, which is a really interesting thing. And yet I'd never walked it this way, over the top of the South Downs. And again, anyone who knows Brighton, if you've never done this, I'd really encourage you to do this, because it just brings a whole new perspective on the city, and it gave us a lot of time to talk and think. And one of the most valuable things I got from this project was the pleasure of slow walking and talking with people about ideas. And I think I cannot overstate how rewarding that was, to think about these many, many different ways in which the railways impact our lives and affect our lives. At the end of the project, this was what I made. It was these 12, these are ticket wallets. I don't know if you can see or tell. And there was one for each individual walk, and they are all full of all these different tickets, which kind of explore. I could have made a book, but I decided to make a really stupid format instead. This has been a real rush-through talk, really scratching the surface. I mean, I could probably have done a talk about any individual one of these walks and the ideas that we talked about. But I guess what I really wanted to get across today was that trains aren't just trains. Like, they are a really important part of how we live our lives in the UK. And I know some people just simply never use them, but I think for a lot of us, they shape and they form, and access to them, an ability to access them, shapes and forms a lot of our lives. And there's so much more we could talk about in terms of the cost of trains, accessibility of trains. You know, I know that our system is not without its flaws, but this is what I made, and this was my sort of love story to trains, and specifically to the London to Brighton railway line. Thank you so much for coming to my real whiz through talk. This is who I am. You can find me online. I'm also a freelance designer, so if you liked how the slides looked, or you want me to do a brochure for you or whatever, give me a shout. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming. I really appreciate it.